Yat sankulam hari padanati matra drishtaya. Vaidurya mara katahema mayar vimanai. Yesham brihat kati tata smita shobhi mukhya. Krishnatmanam naraja adhatur utsmayadhai.
The inhabitants of Vaikuntha travel in their airplanes made of lapis lazuli, emerald, and gold. Although crowded by their consorts, who have large hips and beautiful smiling faces, they cannot be stimulated to passion by their mirth and beautiful charms. Purport and Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the material world, opulences are achieved by materialistic persons by dint of their labor. One cannot enjoy material prosperity unless he works very hard to achieve it. But the devotees of the Lord, who are residents of Vaikuntha, have the opportunity to enjoy a transcendental situation of jewels and emeralds. Ornaments made of gold bedecked with jewels are achieved not by working hard, but by the benediction of the Lord. In other words, devotees in the Vaikuntha world, or even in this material world, cannot be poverty-stricken, as is sometimes supposed. They have ample opulences for enjoyment, but they need not labor to achieve them. It is also stated that in Vaikuntha world, the consorts of the residents are many, many times more beautiful than we can find in this material world, even in the higher planets. It is specifically mentioned here that a woman's large hips are very attractive and they stimulate man's passion. But the wonderful feature of Vaikuntha is that although women have large hips and beautiful faces and are decorated with ornaments of emeralds and jewels, the men are so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that the beautiful bodies of the women cannot attract them. In other words, there is enjoyment of the association of the opposite sex, but there is no sexual relationship. The residents of Vaikuntha have a better standard of pleasure, so there is no need of sex pleasure. Description of Vaikuntha is being presented by Lord Brahma, who is the original father of all living beings within our universe. The denizens of the heavenly planets were so terribly disturbed by the inauspicious natural manifestations throughout the environment due to the two demons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, entering into the womb of Diti. It is described how there was such terrible darkness and so many inauspicious signs were everywhere. The demigods, being very learned in the science, could understand great misfortune was upon them. Although the demigods are controllers of universal affairs,
still, they have the awareness that ultimately they are helpless. They have to approach higher authority for shelter. So they are approaching Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma is explaining the four Kumaras, how they can travel anywhere. Ultimately, it is due to the curse of the four Kumaras upon Vijay and Vijay that they come to this world as demons. So, in contrast to everything that's happening in the material world, Lord Brahma is describing the qualities of Vaikuntha. This material existence is called Kunta because it is a place of anxiety. Why anxiety? Unavoidable is birth, old age, disease, and death. As long as these things are present, there has to be anxiety. Everyone is, from time to time, in anxiety because they know they have to grow old, they have to get disease, and at any moment they could die. Everything is temporary. Whatever is dear to our life, at any moment it will be taken away. Material life, we work so hard to attach ourselves to something that gives us enjoyment. But however much attached we are, everybody is conscious of the reality that it could be taken away at any time. You work so hard to get lots of money, big estate, nice car, and you know as a fact that there are so many thieves who will do anything to get it. They'll even kill you to get it. They are there. They're watching you. Whoever you are, the more you have, the more people will be envious of you. The more people will want to do harm to you. The more people want to exploit whatever facilities you have attained. And also, especially in this age of Kali, any type of disease can come upon anybody at any time. Whoever we are. If the wrong mosquito bites your body and sucks your blood, whoever you may be, you can get terrible, terrible types of malaria. Cancer. Cancer is just killing millions of people. Cancer does not discriminate whether you are from a high caste or a low caste, whether you are a man or a woman, whether you are rich or poor. What to speak of all the other types of diseases? Bhaktivedanta Hospital here at Mira Road. You have some little idea of a fraction of the ocean of varieties of diseases that can attack people and cause them suffering. And the fact is, even when you're in disease, you're in terrible anxiety. And when you're not in disease, you're in anxiety because you know at any moment you can get disease. Or you're in anxiety about your loved ones getting diseased. Just like these little children. To the degree the parents love their children, they're in anxiety. Correct? Mothers, is this correct? Anxiety, you don't know what they'll do. Some disease might get them, or some animal might attack them, or they may play with the wrong thing and hurt themselves. It's a place of anxiety. At every moment. Sometimes the anxieties of the situations of this world are more prominent. In this particular case, there was darkness everywhere. Everything was inauspicious. Fear permeated the entire universe because Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu entered the womb of Diti. So even the great demigods and their heavenly planets who are enjoying such incredible quantities of enjoyment, they are in utter anxiety. They're coming to Lord Brahma. Bhagavad Gita explains, Abrahma bhuvanaloka punar avartanorjana mamupetetu kontiya punara janma navidyate Even the highest planet, Brahmaloka, is a place of misery. What to speak of the lower planets? But one who achieves my abode never has to take birth in a miserable situation again. So Lord Brahma is explaining how this material world is such a miserable place, and what is it like in Vaikuntha? Real intelligence is not to strive to make this material world a nice place. Real intelligence is to strive to get out of the material world and go back home, back to Godhead. You cannot make coal white. Coal is black by nature, through and through. Material world is a place of anxiety, through and through. There may be some happiness, but that happiness only makes you more attached. And the more attached, the more anxieties will come. So therefore, rather than spending this very short term that we have in a human form of existence to try to create a more enjoyable, pleasing place in this world, we should be making arrangements to once and for all get out of this world and go back to Krishna's abode. That is real intelligence. But how do we know what is the spiritual world unless we hear it from the authoritative scriptures? It is the only means of understanding the spiritual realm is to hear submissively. The Lord has revealed this knowledge to us through the sacred scriptures. Now it is very, very important, these descriptions that Lord Brahma is giving. Because when great personalities describe the spiritual world to the denizens of this material world, it is for the purpose of attracting our hearts back to that abode and to teach us the qualities that we must achieve in order to go back to that abode. Lord Brahma has described in Vaikuntha, it is situated in the mode of pure goodness. There is no passion and no ignorance. Passion is the force that creates. Ignorance is the force that destroys. If there is no passion and there is no ignorance, then there is eternality. Sattva-guna, or goodness, is pure existence. Sudha-sattva means when there's pure goodness. Pure goodness means eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. When it's mixed with passion and ignorance, then everything becomes miserable because it becomes temporary in its illusory state. In this material world, there is no such thing as pure goodness. In the material world, everything becomes tinged with ignorance and passion. Therefore, everything is temporary and a source of suffering. But in the spiritual world, everything is ever existing in complete purity. In the spiritual world, everything is personal. There is nothing impersonal. Everything that exists has a personal relationship with Krishna, and every living being has a perfectly personal relationship with each other. That means the ground is personal. Every grain of dust is a person. What to speak of the trees, the rocks, the stones, the birds, the insects. Everyone is a person. And everyone is unified in glorifying Krishna. The prominent feature that we find in the spiritual world is that no one has even the slightest tinge of a desire for personal sense gratification. It is described in this verse how there are men and women sitting beside each other very closely on their airplanes, flower airplanes. And what is the handsome qualities of the men? They have four arms and they look identical practically to Lord Narayan himself, who is all attractive.
But yet the wives do not have the slightest attraction for pleasure of their own senses toward their husbands. And the women are like goddesses of fortune. We are reading the description of them. They are so beautifully decorated and their bodily features are so enchanting. In this world, a woman or a man may be very beautiful, charming to our mind and senses, but in the back of our minds we know, how long will this beauty last? You look at your husband, and then you think of what his father looks like. So you get some little glimpse of what he will look like. You look at your wife, and you think, oh, how nice you are. But then you look at her grandmother. And you get some idea of what she's going to look like in a few days. However much you're attached, if you see a photograph of her grandmother, she looked like this a few years before. So the beauty of this world, it is limited and it is so temporary. So there's never real enjoyment in this world. But in the spiritual world, although the beauty of the men and the beauty of the women is unlimitedly beautiful, and it is eternal. Their bodily features never change. They're ever increasing in their beauty. There's not the slightest desire to enjoy. There's only the desire to, in a unified way, give Krishna enjoyment. This is the special quality of the spiritual world. It is explained that as the denizens of Vaikuntha are riding in their airplanes, the most sweet, fragrant breezes carrying the scent of the malati flowers and other very, very auspicious plants are filling the atmosphere. Now, even when we're engaged in devotional service, when there's an ambrosial, sweet, nectarine, honey-like fragrance being carried by a soft, cooling breeze into our senses, we think, oh, isn't this very nice? Isn't this pleasing? But in Vaikuntha, nobody even notices such beautiful, fragrant breezes. Because everyone is so immersed in offering all their mind, senses, everything for the pleasure of Krishna, it does not register in their minds that there's something pleasing coming into their own body. When they smell the breeze, they're in ecstasy because they're thinking, Krishna's going to enjoy this. They don't think, I am enjoying, how nice, this breeze is so pleasant. They are thinking, oh, if they even notice it at all, they will be thinking, how Krishna will enjoy this nice breeze. So there is no desire for sense gratification whatsoever. Because everyone is experienced in the higher taste of pleasing Krishna. And there is no envy. If you are attached to sense gratification, you have to become envious. Because there's so much competition for the objects of sense gratification in this world. If you are attached to something, you naturally have to become envious of somebody else who may have something better or who may want what you have. But in the spiritual world, everyone is simply thinking in terms of Krishna's pleasure. This is described here. All the birds in the trees are singing the best they could possibly sing just for the pleasure of Krishna. The Chakravaka birds are singing so sweetly. And the peacocks are making so many wonderful artistic songs. And the parrots are chirping. And the cuckoos in various melodies, they are singing for the pleasure of Krishna. And there are millions and millions, unlimited such birds in Vaikuntha. And each one is simply singing as sweet as they can for Krishna. And the combination of all of them together is just a wonderful kirtan of the glorification of the Lord. And Krishna hears simultaneously the combined efforts of all the birds singing, as well as each individual bird's own personal expression of their love and devotion to Krishna through their song. And Krishna is reciprocating with all of them. But yet, when the bumblebee begins to buzz, it's not like the bumblebees of this world. The bumblebees are chanting the names and glories of Krishna. And in Vaikuntha, the bumblebee chants so nicely that all the other birds, they all stop singing just to hear the bumblebee sing the glories of the Lord. They're not thinking, "Oh, bumblebee, let me sing. I sing so nicely." Actually, every bird in Vaikuntha sings so unlimitedly beautifully, but they're not proud. They're not proud. "I am a better singer than you." They're simply thinking of what will please Krishna most. Therefore, when the bee begins to hum the glories of the Lord in his deep, deep, beautiful voice, all the birds stop their singing and they think, "Oh, how nice, how wonderful Krishna is being pleased by hearing this bumblebee sing." And similarly, Tulsi. The trees and the plants of Vaikuntha, they give such beautiful flowers and fruits. Not like in this world. In this world, everyone is subjected to the control of material nature. We have mango trees here in Maharashtra. But the mango tree has no independent free will. The mango tree, if the rain comes, then it gets nourished. At the particular season, the summer season, the mangoes will grow. Have any of you seen in Bombay mangoes growing in the winter? Every fruit has its season. Every flower has its season. But in the spiritual world, every tree just blossoms. The most sweet and fragrant fruits and flowers, anytime, all the time, simply for the pleasure of Krishna. And what kind of flowers grow on the trees of Vaikuntha? We cannot even imagine. These are pure devotees of the Lord who possess all the mystic perfections and beyond. They have pure spiritual bodies. They can do anything they want for the pleasure of Krishna, to any limit. If a tree wants to present flowers to Krishna, what is its power to create the most unbelievably beautiful flowers with the most incredibly fragrant scent? Just one flower of Vaikuntha, and they never wilt, they never get old or deteriorate. The flowers in Vaikuntha are eternal. As long as the tree wants that flower to be sweet and fresh and beautiful, it remains like that. Because it is personal. It is not happening due to the effects of material nature. It is happening all by pure eternal devotion. So the trees are creating the best possible fragrant flowers, the nicest plants and fruits. But yet, when the trees see Tulsi, they all bow down to her because they know Tulsi is most dear to Lord Krishna. He always keeps garlands of Tulsi around his neck. He always keeps the leaves of the tulsi plant on his lotus feet. And what is the greatest joy of all the plants of Vaikuntha? To see what kind of wonderful service and mercy tulsi is getting and giving. This is Vaikuntha. No envy. The material world is competition. If the material world, if all the plants had their own developed consciousness, they would be so envious of tulsi. They would probably be creating conspiracies to plot to assassinate tulsi. Because she's always on Krishna's feet, and I'm not. But in the spiritual world, this is the great joy, that Tulsi Devi is giving such immense pleasure to Krishna. Let us help her. Let us create such a wonderful atmosphere so that Krishna can take Tulsi's beautiful leaves and flowers and decorate his body. Always. This is Sankirtan. This is the full, rich nature of combining together for the glorification of Krishna. Golokera Premadara Harinam Sankirtan. The Sankirtan movement has descended from the spiritual world. And what is the meaning of Sankirtan? Sankirtan is the eternal activity of Vaikuntha. Where everyone, with no envy, with no desire for personal enjoyment, in the most intimately personal way, is simply together, united, to glorify Krishna, to give Krishna pleasure. Everyone is singing, everyone is dancing, everyone is making so many beautiful, beautiful offerings for the pleasure of Krishna. And when you have this consciousness of no envy and no personal desire for selfish enjoyment, then you get everything. As long as you have attachment to have it, you will not get it. Or you'll get something and then it will be ripped away from you at death or before. But in Vaikuntha, how wonderful. Nobody cares about any jewels, except how they can be enjoyed by Krishna. But everyone is bedecked with so many beautiful, precious jewels. They don't care for them. They only care that Krishna enjoys them, and thus they get everything. Even in this world, if you become completely detached from everything, Krishna gives you everything. It's wonderful. And if you're attached to it, he takes it away. Look at the example of Srila Prabhupada. He was not attached to anything but serving Krishna. He had no attachment for money, no attachment for prestige, nothing. He just wanted to use everything for Krishna. And in Bombay, he was telling one person, we went to America with 40 rupees. And now there are so many lakhs of rupees are coming to me every day. Hare Krishna. He went to America. Nobody knew who he was. He came. There was no one except a professional person hired from Traveler's Aid to greet him at the docks in New York City and put him on a public bus to Butler, Pennsylvania. And then the home that he went to, they didn't even want him there. After some time, they developed a love for him. But when he first came, it was just an obligation to the father. So this is how he came. And because he was not attached to anything, soon everywhere he would go, he would be flying on jet airplanes. There would be hundreds and hundreds of people waiting at the airports with garlands and with wonderful plates of opulent prasad and with sometimes big, big limousines, Rolls Royce, Lincoln Continentals, driving him, nice rooms everywhere. He wasn't attached to any of it. He said to one of his devotees,
I'm simply thinking how wonderful it was in my little rooms at Radha Damodar. Some of you who have gone to Vrindavan and saw his rooms at Radha Damodar, please know that they have been renovated like anything. Just about 15 years ago, if you went to those rooms, you would see something of what they looked like when Prabhupada lived there. They were just clay walls. They were very, very simple. Now it's brightly painted with all nice furnishings because it's a museum for Prabhupada. But at that time it was a very, very, the simplest possible way to exist. He lived in that room. And when he brought in 1971, he showed us his rooms. They were still in the same state as when he left in 1965. Devotees were shocked. Such a great personality, living so simple. Level of poverty. Although he was living in beautiful, beautiful buildings provided by his disciples, he would say, "I am simply longing for the day to return to Radha Damodar." He had no attachment whatsoever, except that Krishna be glorified. And when you have no attachments, except for the service of Krishna, then Krishna can provide so many wonderful facilities for you to use in his service. But if you become attached to those things, then he takes it all away. So here we find the residents of Vaikuntha. They're wearing beautiful gold crowns and necklaces and earrings. And you may ask, why? If they're not attached to these things, why do we find the description of them with emeralds, lapis lazulis and diamonds, rubies? They all wear all these things, everyone. If not attached, why don't they just live like hermits? Why don't they have matted hair and wear only loincloths in Vaikuntha? Because in Vaikuntha, everyone is so completely pure. They decorate themselves so that Krishna will enjoy them better. They don't decorate themselves so that my husband will be attracted to me, or my wife will be attracted to me, or other people will be attracted to what I have. They decorate themselves because it is an expression of how I can do the best I possibly can to be pleasing to Krishna. It's an act of devotion. This body belongs to Krishna. This body will be seen by Krishna. Let me make it as beautiful as it can be for the pleasure of Krishna. No selfish desire. And even today, some of the pujaris of the temples, you see that they decorate themselves in certain ways. Sometimes pujaris wear earrings, nice earrings. Or sometimes they wear some other types of jewels. And we think, what nonsense is this? But actually, it's a matter of consciousness. Some of them wear the jewelry so that people will be attracted to them. That is bondage. Others will wear because they're thinking that I'm going on the altar before the Lord and I should look as pleasing as possible for the pleasure of the Lord. Of course, the jewel of bhakti is what really pleases Krishna. Simplicity, renunciation, vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga, that is pleasing to Krishna. But in the spiritual world, there's no need for renunciation because everyone is completely pure. So there's no vairagis in Vaikuntha. Everyone has already gone through that and fulfilled that if necessary. The eternal residents of the spiritual world, they have nothing to renounce because the only thing in their heart is the desire to please Krishna.
But we cannot return to that abode until we have this consciousness. That is what is most important. As long as we're holding on to our own selfish aspirations for material enjoyment, you cannot go to Vaikuntha. Can you imagine what would happen if a materialistic person were to live in Vaikuntha? The person would go completely mad. There'd be no way to control your mind. Just think, in your state of consciousness today, if you were in Vaikuntha, you men, you're sitting on a beautiful flower airplane, and there's a woman 100 million, trillion, billion, quadrillion times more beautiful than any woman in this world, crunched up next to you. And you're wearing all sorts of precious emeralds and diamonds and lapis lazulis and gold and silvers. And there's incredible perfume fragrances coming in your nose. And everything around is so nice. What would happen to you? You would go crazy. You'd be in a hopeless state. You'd just become like a dog, just foaming at the mouth with lust. And it's true. And you start singing beautiful songs. And then the bumblebee starts singing. And everyone says, shut up, the bumblebee's singing. Think, why the bumblebee? Why not me? You couldn't survive even a second there. You would be so envious, so much lusty for enjoyment. Therefore, you cannot go there until you're completely pure of envy and pride. Until you're completely pure from any desire for material enjoyment. So by hearing the glories of Vaikuntha, we understand what we have to become. And then we have to come to the platform of where we're at and gradually develop our consciousness in Krishna consciousness. But above Vaikuntha is Goloka Vrindavan, where every gopi is hundreds of millions of times even more beautiful than the goddesses of fortune of Vaikuntha. What would happen to you if you went to Goloka Vrindavan? It would be impossible. You'd be falling down every lava matra, every 12th of a second. Therefore, you're not allowed to go there until you're completely pure of any desires for material enjoyment, until you have completely awakened your natural ecstatic love for Krishna. In Goloka Vrindavan, no one is thinking of enjoying Krishna. Everyone is just thinking how to increase Srimati Radharani's service to Krishna. Not even as her direct servant, but as the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, to try to make beautiful arrangements for Radha and Krishna to meet together and enjoy. And our existence is eternally situated on the principle of just living in such a way to help them enjoy each other. No envy, no lust, no pride, no greed, no anger. Everything is completely transcendent, selfless in service. That is the spiritual world. So when we give up the shackles of material enjoyment, then we enter into the realm where everything is there. Every tree, it is described here in Vaikuntha, is a desire tree. Your desires will be fulfilled. Can you imagine what would happen to you if all your desires were fulfilled in this world? Your life would be a total mess. But in the spiritual world, there's only one desire, to please Krishna. But the heart is so personal. It has so many varieties of ways that it wants to please Krishna. And whatever you desire, it is fulfilled. Chintamani Dham. That is the spiritual world. So that is our ultimate goal in life. To create the atmosphere of Vaikuntha in our own life. Actually, people don't just go back to Godhead. You have to really, really be in this mood to go there. The Acharyas explain, even from this world, if you become a pure, unalloyed devotee of Krishna, with no desire except to please Krishna, and you leave your body chanting the name of Krishna, completely fixed in the memory and remembrance of Krishna, you don't go back to the spiritual sky. First you go to a planet in the material world where Krishna is performing his lila. And then even in your completely purified state of Krishna consciousness, you are further trained in your particular relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. And then after Krishna ends his pastimes in that universe, then you go back to Goloka Vrindavan. Such a rare and precious goal. That is our aspiration. So we want to qualify ourselves in this life in such a way. Although material longings are so deeply entrenched within our hearts, by the mercy of Krishna, by hearing his glories, by serving his devotees, by chanting his names, we can purify our hearts. But we have to have the proper motivation. We are practicing Krishna consciousness for the pleasure of Krishna. We have to have this motivation. We have to pray for this motivation. We have to long for this motivation of pure desire for the service of the Lord. Today is Kartik Purnima. It is the full moon night where Krishna performs his wonderful Raslila in Sri Vrindavan Dham. It is also the day that Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu first arrived in Sri Vrindavan. He stayed in Vrindavan for 2 months. And he arrived on this particular day. Thus, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, some temples, especially the Sri Radha Raman temple, they have a big festival today. They have a procession throughout Vrindavan and wonderful kirtans. They serve out big, big feasts to thousands of people. Wonderful prasad of Radha Raman. To celebrate Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's arrival in Vrindavan. Krishna returning to Vrindavan in his supreme, most magnanimous form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is also the appearance day of Sri Nimbark Acharya, one of the great, great selfless and pure devotees who was the founder of the Nimbark Sampradaya. He took initiation from the four Kumaras. And from the instructions he received from the four Kumaras, there was the Sanat Kumar Samhita, one of the great scripture that specifically teaches the love of Vrindavan. Sri Thakur Bhaktivinoda explains that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted two essential principles from each of the four sampradayas. Accepted the complete refutation of Mayavad philosophy. And also the worship of the deity of Krishna.
from the Ramanuja Sampradaya. He accepted pure devotional service with no tinge of jnana or karma or yoga. And service to the Vaishnavas. From the Rudra Sampradaya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the principles that Vishnu Swami taught of taking complete shelter of Krishna as the only shelter in life and the path of spontaneous love, Raga Bhakti. And from the Kumar Sampradaya, which was spread gloriously by Sri Nimbarkacharya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted two very, very sacred principles. The unparalleled supreme glory of the gopis' love for Krishna and the ultimate position of Srimati Radharani to become the servant of her servant. It is a very holy day for us today. All of these great acharyas have taught us the process of how to go back home, back to Godhead. The inhabitants of Vaikuntha travel in their airplanes made of lapis lazuli, emerald and gold, although crowded by their consorts who have large hips and beautiful smiling faces. They cannot be stimulated to passion by their mirth and beautiful charms. Is there any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, in Vaikuntha, everybody looks like Narayan. How do they take a darshan of Narayan and serve Narayan?
His question is, in Vaikuntha, everyone looks like Narayan, so how does everyone take darshan of Narayan and serve Narayan? What is the problem? Spiritual world, although everyone has beautiful, eternal, transcendental qualities and form, still everyone is completely aware that Narayan is the source of all beauty. We are all just parts and parcels of his beauty. He is the ultimate source. He is the reservoir of all pleasure. And everyone's eternal meditation is to serve Narayan and to help others to serve Narayan. There is no ego, no false ego. Yes? Very high subject. This question is, say it in the microphone.
Can you please just throw some light on the relation between Chandravali Sakhi and Srimati Radharani? They externally seem to have the relation of competition to please Krishna. So, as you explained previously, that in spiritual world there is no competition. So can you just throw some light on this particular relation?
He is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. Her eternal occupation is to give pleasure to Srimati Radharani.
But the spiritual world is so personal and transcendental in its variegatedness that she creates, as the servant of Sri Radharani, she creates a competitive type of an atmosphere only to increase the relationship of love between Radha and Krishna. That is her only purpose. That is her only motivation. Sometimes we hear the stories of the wonderful relationships of how Radharani is angry with Krishna performing man at Man Mandir, Mangar, because she has found out that Krishna was with Chandravali instead of with her. These stories are there. But please understand, Sri Radharani's only desire in her existence is to give pleasure to Krishna. She only gets mad, she only enters into this transcendental mood of man to increase Krishna's pleasure. And Chandravali is giving the reason for her to do this. So Srimati Radharani, she understands, Chandravali understands that they're simply working together to give the ultimate pleasure to Krishna. So she's only enhancing the sweetness of the nectar of the relationship between Radha and Krishna. That's her only service in the spiritual world. So it's not a competition of envy. It's a competition of sacrificial, selfless love for the person we're competing with in the highest, purest state, which we cannot understand with our conditioned minds. Does that answer your question? Yes. It is possible to qualify yourself in this lifetime if you sincerely surrender with humility and devotion. Definitely. In fact, it is certain. It is Krishna's promise. Manmanabhava madbhaktir. Krishna says, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me without fail. This is my promise. It is impossible for you, as an insignificant jiva, to overcome the power of Maya. But by the mercy of Krishna, the ocean of Maya is reduced to the amount of water contained in a hoofprint of calf. By our sincere and humble efforts in this life, throughout our life, of making the right choices, we can please Krishna. We please the Vaishnavas, we please Guru, we please Krishna. He can help us, and He will help us. It is His promise. And we can be perfect in this life. Yes. You would die instantly. You would see all this wonderful, beautiful thing and everyone's doing it for Krishna, and you would just be thinking, how can possibly this be for all for Krishna? You would die. You couldn't exist there. That flood has to first wash away your material desires in this world. Vaikuntha is here. Krishna is non-different than his name. When you actually taste through offenseless chanting the nectar of the holy name, that will wash away all your material desires. When you taste the pure name of Krishna, even once, in all the pleasures of this world, your lips will curl in distaste and you will spit at the thought. So that is our service here. And when we become so completely purified, then we are eligible to go back home, back to God. Golokera Premadana Harinam Sankirtan. The spiritual world has descended in the holy name. Chant sincerely, chant purely, and taste the nectar of the holy name. Just millions and millions, unlimitedly more pleasurable, the taste of the name, than anything of this world. What is that taste of the name? It is the taste of Krishna. And Krishna reveals the taste of his name to the degree you surrender to him. Trinarapi sunichena tarorapi seishna namani namana dena kirtaniya saladi. So let us take shelter of the chanting of the holy name. Not the exact numbers that you're saying. But the idea is you have to be 100%. But if you die and you're not 100%, but you've tried very earnestly and honestly and sincerely in your life, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, ananyas chintayanto mam yejana pariupashate tesham nityabhayuktanam yogakshemam vahamyam. Krishna says, you surrender to me, I will preserve what you have, I will carry what you lack. You've surrendered to me in your life, you're 90%, you leave your body, I'll give you the other 10%, then you can go back. Ready, roll. Srila Prabhupada ki! Thank you.